This is the Art of the Hudson Valley, broadcasting locally on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Greene, and Columbia counties, New York, and streaming globally online at WGXC.org. I'm your host, Chad Weckler, and today we are on location in Latham, Albany County, New York, at the Leading Age New York headquarters. And my guests today are Denise Alper, who's the executive vice president here, and Earl Gifford, who's the member specialist here. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
And before we get to the art part of the reason why I'm here talking to both of you, is we need to let our listeners know what Leading Age New York is and does. So, Denise, please.
Great. I'm happy to answer that. Leading Age New York is the only association representing the full continuum of nonprofit care, services, and housing for seniors and the disabled in New York State. So our members are nursing home, people who provide assisted living, senior residences, and the like. And we're actually three companies. Our parent is sort of the overarching everything else is our association. We have a foundation that does research and education programs, and we even have a for-profit company that provides services to our members, such as consulting and other kinds of products that they would need. So as the association, we really have five main areas, like most associations. And one is we advocate on behalf of our members and their interests. We provide, as I mentioned, education programs so that people can maintain their professional certifications that are necessary to operate in the state. And we provide information and technical assistance, and we do that through research and data analysis that supports our public policy agenda. And as I mentioned, we provide products and services. Probably of the most interest to our listeners today is we have a consumer guide that is free for the asking. And maybe Earl also wears many hats, but he also is responsible for the consumer guide. Maybe you can describe what that's about.
Yeah, basically, our consumer guide is a alphabetical listing by county of all of our members. And in the list, you'll have the name of the organization, their contact information, phone, fax, and web address, and also in line of all the services that they offer.
Now, who would be members?
Members would be nursing facilities, adult care facilities, housing organizations, MLTC, different community service plans.
What's ML?
That would be managed long-term care plans.
Okay.
And like I said, these were all listed alphabetically in order by county. And in the introduction of the book, you'll see a guide for the consumer that describes all the different types of levels of service available and basically just self-descriptive that consumer can go through to figure out what type of service they actually need and what they're looking for.
Now, as I recall my New York State history, I believe there are 62 counties in the state. Do you have representatives in every county in the state?
I believe we do, yes.
That's a big state.
We have, I think, about over 500 nursing home members, don't we? Or primary members.
For nursing home, I believe it's 372 for nursing home members. And then second in line would be the ACF level, then going down to the housing, and then the community services from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's one of the statistics that I'm kind of curious of, as we age. Some people choose to go into what you might call retirement homes or facilities that you may not need. You may not have Alzheimer's or a disease such as that. But are there members who you cover that stay at home?
Yeah, we do have some members that are home care members. Mm. We have a couple of different types of those. There's licensed home care, unlicensed home care, and other various types of levels.
We are an aging society, aren't we?
Yes we are.
Are there statistics of how our age brackets are getting older and more people are filling those?
Well, certainly the baby boomers, which is such a big cohort of not just in the state but in the country, as they're aging, one of the things that we look at is what is going to be the demand for that group. Mm. The general sense is people will want to stay in their homes longer, so there's more of a concentration on providing services to people who will need them as they stay in their home, and we call that aging in place. So that's really, I think, what the future has to bear.
And this program that you started, Earl, have you been with this art part of the program since the beginning?
I've only started dealing with it when I first started here back in 1998. It's actually started back in 1991. And back at that point, it was actually an alliance between back then New York Association of Homes of Services of the Aging and New York Foundation for the Arts. And they did that together for 6 years, and then we took it over full time.
Now, question for both of you, and Denise, you have an art background. How important do you think it is that art is implemented in a lot of these residences?
Well, for sure, and I think that this is one thing that distinguishes our nonprofit members over others, is that this group has a real focus on the quality of life, not just the quality of care and making sure that everybody gets the attention they need, but in fact that they're enjoying a high quality of life. And I think artistic enrichment is part of fulfilling that, and that's really stressed in our member organizations.
How many kinds of art genres or mediums or do you think are taking place in a lot of the residences throughout the state?
I think it depends on the type of residence. And depending on what they're doing year by year, we have quite a few projects that come in year by year. Like we have a project that came in this year where they did a study of a chessboard from different angles. About 6 or 7 paintings came in from a chessboard from different type of angles. And there's last year, the same organization did a thing on different pictures of fish. So some of them have different programs, different things that they decide to do each time they're doing something for that program for that year.
Now, this program, it's called the Traveling Art Show. What's the proper name?
It's our Leading Age New York Competition and Exhibit. And it, like we said, it started back in 1991, and it started hitting the road in 96. And it's been going to various locations here and there.
Earl, how is it implemented in across the state? What's the calendar schedule?
It starts out, the call for artwork goes out at the beginning of December, and we give them a couple of months to get their artwork together, and the due date is usually the last Friday in February. And then we have our judging first week of March. And once that's taken place, we do the other parts of the judging competition. We have a staff choice award that gets awarded to from leftover paintings. And then from those, we also have gallery awards where paintings get to hang around the office while the art show itself is on the road.
And how many pieces were submitted this year?
This year we had 230 pieces by 57 different member facilities.
Wow, that's a lot. And that's across the state. And not every artist is a resident. There are also staff members that participate.
Yeah, there are also, we have a staff and volunteer category that we have. This year, I think we had 17 total paintings from that category. And most of them are resident category, and then we have some that are registrant categories. Those are paintings that are sent in by adult health care facilities.
So throughout the year, once and judging takes place in March, you said, sometimes it's exhibited here at Leading Age, and then you take it on the road. How many times do you take it on the road, and where do you take it?
It goes to various locations around the state. We're going to be going to 5 different locations this year, and it also goes to several of our bigger conferences, our annual conference, our director of nurses conference. This year it's going to be going to our financial managers conference for the first time, and while it's not in those, it'll be going to those other locations still to be determined, and while it's on display there, it'll be displayed here at our offices.
Now, is it sponsored every year by different organizations? Who was the sponsor this year?
This year was the first time we actually have a proud partner in the show this year. We're proud to have Springline Design, Architecture, and Engineering. They are a great local company, and they are a New York State certified woman-owned business. They provide services to different state agencies, municipalities, healthcare facilities, and historic places. They're a great company, and we're great to be partnered with them this year.
That's great. So next year might be another sponsor.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's good. It's always good to have people support good things that people do.
Yes,
and this is definitely a wonderful program, I think. Denise and Earl, what have been some of the responses that you get?
All the facilities, especially the ones that host it, get the most out of it because they get to see all the paintings as it's on tour. And to see the looks at the residents' faces as they get to look at everything. I have the option of going to all the each stop has a reception or open house, and I get to go to all the open houses. And the ones that are early in the year, I actually bring the certificates that are awarded to the residents. I get to hand those out there at those, and it's a great experience.
Let's talk about the age differences for residents from the youngest to the oldest.
This year, some of our volunteers, we have a couple of volunteers that are actually in high school this year, going all the way up to, we have some volunteers that are in their 70s and 80s. And then as far as residents, registrants, that goes, I have residents as young as in their 40s all the way up. We have a couple this year that are over 100 that entered in artwork.
Earl, you're going to take me on a tour, and we'll look at and talk about some of the artwork. So we'll, in fact, let's do that now. Take me on a tour. Let's see what you got. Earl, now we're in the boardroom where all the best ofs are hanging.
Yes. This year was the first year that an actual three-dimensional, well, it's the second year that an actual three-dimensional piece had gotten the Best in Show review. And it was the first year that an actual group project won for the Best in Show, because normally they're mostly all individual projects, but this year we've had four different ones that were group projects.
And is that the Birds of Feather that we're looking at?
Yes. Yeah, that's the Birds of Feather. Yep, done by a facility out in Rochester, organization out in Rochester. Yeah.
And what is it made of?
Different pieces of tin and aluminum, and they colored them with different techniques, some marker, some watercolor, some tinting that they've done, and it's all done with nails, just holding them on little pieces at a time.
I'm just going to look up at the label. So this is from the Unity Living Center in Rochester, and it's a group project called Birds of a Feather, and it is the best in show. Now, Earl, we're looking at the Merit Award. Can you explain the Merit Award?
The Merit Award is, there's three different tiers. You have your Best in Show, and then there's six different Merit Awards, and then there's four different honorable mentions that get voted as well. And there are three different tiers. We have, it's actually 60 paintings that are chosen from a resident registrant standpoint and 10 that are chosen from a staff and volunteer standpoint. So there's different merit and honorable mention awards from those categories as well.
And this one, the musician, it's called?
Yes. That was done by a resident at Self-Help Community Services.
In Flushing.
In Flushing.
So now the next one is the honorable mention.
Yeah, that was done by a person, again, from Self-Help Community Services. They got a great group of artists down there, and this is Child Under the Sun. Awesome oil and acrylic painting of a child sitting on the beach, and the frame just goes really well with the painting, and the sunlight shining off his eyes is really, really.
Who chooses the frames?
They come in already framed. The artist does the frame. Oh. That's one of the stipulations, that they need to come in ready to hang. So sometimes you'll have a fancy frame, and other times you'll have a clear plastic with a piece of tape. Here you go, ready to hang.
Well, that's great. Let's continue the tour.
Okay.
So, Earl, we're in the, I guess,
the lobby
of Leading Age here, and there's quite a few pieces of art here hanging on boards and the walls, and we're looking at one that's also a Merit Award. Can you explain this one?
Yep, this is actually a group project that was done out of one of our member facilities out in Rochester, where each person took an individual block and they painted a fish on it and gave it its own particular name, coloring, and then after everybody was done with their fish individually, they all put them together and then put a frame around it and came up with this great collage.
That is wonderful. I really like it. And I love the green frame. It kind of works very well in with the
type of coloring.
Yeah, the fish. And, and we're also looking at a merit award.
Yes, this is a piece done, again, out of Rochester. They got a great group of artists out there as well. This is kind of an abstract piece done from 9/11. You can see in the shadows of the Twin Towers with all the coloring, the abstract coloring around it as well.
Now, when the residents and the staff are creating these pieces of artwork, is there any discussion beforehand as to maybe the medium that they're going to use or subject matter?
No, this is all up to the artist, and depending on what they're used to doing. We have a call for artwork that goes out at the end of the year, and we give them until the end of February to get them sent in, and then the judging takes place the first week of March. And most of the time, 9 out of 10 paintings were created during that two-month time period, and then we have other artists that also worked on their paintings throughout the year because we have ones that enter just about every year, so they have the whole year to work on a piece if they know they're going to be entering it.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
So, Earl, I noticed this is quite extravagant, and this is also an honorable mention. Can you explain? This is beautiful.
Well, yes, it's a piece, another piece done by Self-Help Community Services. Artist did some watercoloring here of a tree with some flowering on it, and it's just the detail work is just incredible, and the framing goes around it really, really nicely.
There is a large selection of paintings, watercolors, abstracts. Here's a photograph that's also an honorable mention.
And this was actually done by a volunteer out of Rochester, New York. She works at a facility, and she took this picture down at the Apple Store of Fifth Avenue down in New York City under their stairs, heading up from the lobby to the second floor. It's a really, really neat piece.
Okay.
So, Earl, what are we looking at?
We're now in the lobby, and the pictures that aren't on the standalones itself didn't make it into the top 70 necessarily in the show. These are hanging on the walls. And these we call gallery awards. People, we also have other awards that we can talk about as well as later on, but these particular awards are hung throughout the public offices, around the offices, and they were great paintings that we chose to be hung in these areas done by various artists, and the good thing about the offices that we're in now, the large size that we have, we can hang on to every painting now, and every painting wins an award now.
That's awesome. That's great.
And with our offices that we had before, we actually had to turn some away. So, but now we don't have to do that anymore. Every entry wins. So,
everyone is a winner.
Everyone's a winner, yeah.
Earl, from your experience, primarily the residents who create the artwork, do they have already a background in art?
Some of them have backgrounds in art, careers as artists or commercial photography, doing ads, that type of field work. And then you'll also have people that have never done artwork their entire lives and have not done any artwork until they've gone into a facility and decided to join up an activity class. And sometimes the work we get in will be a first time that they've ever done artwork their entire lives.
Have you had repeat artists?
Oh, yeah.
From year to year?
Yes, we have numerous artists that repeat from year to year. Sometimes they might take a year or two off and then they're back, but we have quite a few of them that send in pieces every single year, yes.
Now, Earl, you talked about the art that's on the wall, and we're also looking at these, what you call standalones. How many of the standalones are there?
Altogether, we have 6 standalone racks that are holding all 70 pieces of the show. And then when it goes traveling, the traveling racks go along with the paintings to the different facilities, and they'll be on display there with these racks.
And the artwork that's on the walls, will they stay here on the walls?
Yes, they remain here in the offices while that's on the road, yep.
And the ones that are on the wall, they stay up for a full year?
They stay up until October. When the artwork comes back off the show, we have our last conference in November. That's our director of nursing conference. And after that's over with, the art show comes back and gets boxed up, and all the paintings get returned as the new ones come in. So,
Earl, what are we looking at now?
We're in our president's office, Jim Klein, and we're looking at what we call a staff choice award. What happens is after the judging is done with and the best in show and all that is picked, all those paintings are removed from the judging room and the leftover pieces are put back in. And the next morning, all of our people on staff get to pick a picture to hang in their office for the year while the art show is on the road.
That's a great idea. And this is a lovely selection. This is from Cohos.
That was actually done by a director activity of Cohos. So that was a staff entry. Really, really neat collage of different colors.
So, Earl, the on the walls, and we've looked at quite a few walls that you have here at Leading Age. How many walls are there that you actually have artwork on?
There's three major hallways that we hang them in, and then we have a bigger meeting room that we hang any leftovers that don't get into these hallways. All the bulk of the leftover artwork gets hung on the wall there as a big collage of work and ends up becoming the wall on our Facebook page.
I can see why you're so proud of this program.
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorite tasks here at Leading Age that I get to take part in each year. It's like Christmas every time. When the artwork starts coming in, I get to open each box. And you never know what you're going to see. Every package is different, you know. Hmm. So it's a surprise in itself.
So, Earl, we're now in your office. What's on your wall?
I have two pictures of Charlie Brown on my wall. I'm a huge Peanuts fan. And it just so happens this year that two different pictures of Charlie Brown came in. So I had to grab those right away since I knew they weren't going to make it on the road. I was one of the first ones in the room. So I was able to pick those up, and they both came from a facility down on Long Island, St. John Land. So
Earl, that was a great tour. Remind me, how many pieces did we just look at?
We have 70 altogether that were on the standalones, and scattered around the hallways, we have over 70 pieces.
So what happens now after all the exhibits are done? Do you have the job of repacking them and sending them back home?
Luckily, we have a company that we deal with that actually boxes up all the paintings individually for us at a great price. And then we all the boxes come back to me, and we ship them out via UPS to all the directors of activities, and then they get the paintings back to the artists.
And that happens when?
That happens between November, end of November, all the way through December, and sometimes into early January, depending on how the boxing process goes.
Certainly my experience of having older parents and grandparents and in-laws, I know when that artwork comes back, if I'm a family member, I might wish to have it because all the artwork was fabulous. And I would imagine some of the residencies also probably exhibit them too.
Oh, yeah. A lot of our members have their own art competitions and exhibits. I've had a few different examples where people have felt, can I have our painting back early because we're doing our own art celebration, so we need to have our artwork back for that.
And Denise, what happens at these receptions that go out throughout the state?
Well, besides being an opportunity for these facilities and programs to really celebrate the talent of their residents, staff, and even their volunteers, it's also a great opportunity for them to get their local elected officials involved, to network with other organizations, and to engage with us in a totally different way than we normally would in the normal advocacy process. So it really, we love the show, but it also can be a benefit for the folks who can do a reception at their own facility.
And who from Leading Age is there to represent?
That would be me.
Good for you, Earl. So you get to do a lot of traveling.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And let's go back to one of the, what you mentioned was the Consumer Guide to Continuing Care. And this is a very handy booklet that is available through your agency. So, Denise, can you talk a little bit more about this resource?
Sure. And again, this is Earl's handiwork. He wears many hats in the organization. But I think what is really exciting about this is I know for my own family members, as you just mentioned, Chad, that it's very hard to navigate and match what the elders' needs are with what's available in the marketplace. And this guide is a really terrific kind of leads you through the different kinds of options, what they'll cost, how you would be required to pay, what the living arrangements are. And it's very comprehensive. And as I said, you know, for something that can be a daunting process, to have, you know, summarized in a dozen or so pages, just some real basic information that allows the consumer to know what questions to ask as they're going through this process, I think is really invaluable. So that guide is available either at our website, which is leadingageny.org, or there is a phone number, 1-877-LTC-BOOK, which is 1-877-582-2665. And as its author, maybe Earl, you have something else to add? Or not.
Or not. We covered it quite nicely.
Well, and these, the resources are... Are they by county when we were getting into the residencies, the facilities?
Yes, everything is in alphabetical order by county. That's also alphabetical order in the book.
And these are your members, which are primarily nonprofits.
Yes, they would all be not-for-profit, indeed.
Denise, like you said, it can be very daunting. I think rarely the person themselves are looking for these facilities. It's usually family members who are most times not prepared to make that decision for their loved ones. So it's great to have a resource to at least search out possible answers to questions and actually also find out some questions that you might not have thought about. I mean, from both of your experiences, what are some of the concerns that I think, you know, this booklet is trying to answer?
Well, you'll have a family member that has another part of the family that, you know, she might be coming down with Alzheimer's, he or she might be coming down with Alzheimer's or dementia, and they just don't really know much about it and how to treat it and where to go for treatment or where to even begin looking for treatment. And this book is a large helping hand in doing that and finding out more facts about it.
So let's bring in Linda Spokane. And Linda, what is your role here at Leading Age?
I am the Vice President for Research and Analytics, and I work on policy-driven research here at the association and work on grant work that we do with our members.
Now, I'm really curious, and the main reason why we've brought you here is your daughter started a great program, and when I saw it on the Facebook page for Leading Age, that just wowed me. So I'm curious to find out how that program got started and what it is.
My daughter started a club called Generation Outreach, and it's to help nursing homes in the region implement the Music and Memory Program. And the Music and Memory Program was founded by Dan Cohen.
From New York City. Yeah.
And he founded this program, and it's really been taking off. And basically what this program does, it's a very simple concept. It's putting music onto iPods and allowing the nursing home residents to it's really geared to putting music of their generation that they would remember and putting it on the iPods and having them listen to the music. What the outcomes have been from the program is that these residents who were once non-responsive and didn't participate in any activities really started to blossom and really started to become a more active participant in the nursing home. And there's a website, the Music and Memory website, where you can go on and you can see all the wonderful things that this program has been able to achieve. And basically, the concept is so simple because all they really need is iPods and earphones and the music. Mm. And there's a training program that the Music and Memory team provides to each nursing home that's interested in implementing the Music and Memory program into their nursing home. So with my involvement with Leading Age New York and my conversations with my daughter, we started talking about this, and she thought it would be a great idea to form a club. And in order to do that, she needed to get an advisor, and she needed to go through that whole process. And they implemented this into the Wesley Nursing Home in Saratoga. And that was the first nursing home that they took on. Mm. So they did some fundraising. The community was unbelievably supportive of this program. And they implemented the program at Wesley, and they have gone on to implement it at other nursing homes.
And this is a program at Saratoga High School?
Yes. So the club is called Generation Outreach, and it was started at Saratoga High School. So these are high school students that have an interest in philanthropy and some community service, and they raise money through bake sales. They did a bowling fundraiser. They get donated iPods from people who just have them lying around, because a lot of people have iPods lying around. They use the money to purchase refurbished iPods, so you can get refurbished iPods for $15, and they buy those for the nursing homes, as well as music cards so that they can download music. And what's wonderful is that the Music and Memory team, if you're a nonprofit nursing home, they will reduce their training fee to come to your nursing home, train your staff on this program, and kind of follow you through to make sure that you're implementing it properly. And what was really neat last year was that they implemented this program, the students implemented it at Wesley, and then at the end of the year, the activities director invited the students to come and see the program in action, and the students were able to do that, and that was really special.
Have you seen some of the results?
I only have seen the results through my daughter. Oh. She told me about it. I know that they also have a video, again, on the Music and Memory program of a couple of residents that they kind of followed through this program. And you can kind of see the changes in the residents as a result of this. And this was really confirmed through the Wesley program. There were, I don't know how many residents they started with the program, but they were all very successful. And it was neat to see.
It sounds like this, both the visual arts and the music programs need to be in every residency, I think. The arts, as Denise was saying, can make an impact throughout all of our lives forever.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think with the Music and Memory program, they started out small, but they're really growing, because what has been demonstrated is that it works, that you have these people that no longer remember the present, but they remember the past. And so if you can connect the past with the present through music, that has been a very successful program. And I think nursing homes are embracing this, because it makes the residents happier and it improves their quality of life. And so that's what's really important.
I love the whole idea about generational music. And it seems like primarily for Alzheimer's, that's what happens, is we retain older memories and lose more at the moment memories. And I can imagine the excitement to almost reconnect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you can see that through some of the videos and the pictures that, you know, that have been taken and documented for this program. That's true.
Oh, and in about 40 years, I'll be listening to the Beatles, I think. We were talking earlier about the Learning Age website, and you guys also have a Facebook page. And that's how I found out about this music program. So who would like to talk about, looks like Earl. Earl's volunteering to talk about the Facebook presence that your agency has and what we can expect to see when we go there.
Well, the Facebook page is basically a lighter side from our website. It's more public, more open, more things that the general public would want to come in and see, different stories that are lighter-hearted. And coming from the art show perspective, starting in May, we're going to be doing our art show Artist Spotlight of the Day. And that runs while the show is out on the road. We feature an artist and their painting on our Facebook page and on our website every day. And then at the end of the art show season, when all the paintings go back, we have a virtual art show competition where we have all the paintings that the top 70 get posted to our website. And people at the facilities get to vote on the paintings that they like the best. And then we have a first, second, and third place gift card prize that goes along with that.
I'm kind of curious, and I don't, you know, I'm throwing this question out there. How, I mean, social media seems to be a young person's outlet for communication. Is the aging society involved in our social media as much? You know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or any thoughts?
I can only speak from my experience, and that is that I think that the younger, older generation, those people, you know, between 55 and 65, have really started to embrace Facebook, at least, as a mechanism to communicate with their families and to post photographs and to keep up to date. And I think that that's only going to translate into when they get older, that they're still going to maintain that connection with social media. So I think that perhaps not so much with, you know, the 75 to 85 to 95 group isn't so much on Facebook, but I think that those that are coming up, those boomers, so to speak, are using social media much more.
And it depends on the facility too. There's lots of facilities that introduce them more to computers and technology than other facilities might as well, so that helps.
And how does one find your Facebook presence?
Just need to go to our Facebook page. You can get to that from our Leading Age New York website, www.leadingageny.org, and there's a Facebook link right on the bottom of the page that'll take you to our Facebook page.
This is Chad Weckler. I wanted to thank our guests from the Leading Age New York, where we were talking to Denise Alper, who's the Executive Vice President of Leading Age New York, Earl Gifford, who is the Member Specialist, and Linda Spokane, who's the Vice President for Research and Analytics. And for this segment of The Art of the Hudson Valley, my guest in the studio today is Sheena Salvino, who is the Executive Director of the Hudson Development Corporation. We will be discussing the next phase of the Hudson Walking Guide and the RFP for Wayfinding Project. And Sheena and I have often discussed, a lot of people have asked, what is an RFP? And that stands for Request for Proposal. And wayfinding is also one of those terms that can be confusing. And wayfinding basically is finding one's way. Is that right, Sheena?
Yeah, pretty simply. Wayfinding, excuse me, typically has a few different components to it, but in our case, we're looking at a walking guide, which is our print version. There's often online maps, like Google Maps, like the ones you'll see on HDC website, to find stores, retail locations, cultural hubs, those types of things. And then there's your on-site wayfinding programs, which usually look like, most people are familiar with the ones in malls where you walk up and it says, you are here, and this is what is within here next to you or within a 5-minute walk. And lots of cities have them. And Hudson, having such a wide variety, plethora, and ever-changing group of businesses and organizations and foundations, might benefit from such a wayfinding system. So we put together this RFP.
And wayfinding, when we talk about you are here, primarily starts with the gateways to Hudson, which is usually the city limits, to let people know that they are entering the city of Hudson, and how we might identify ourselves. Some cities say we are the first of this. They might just say, welcome to Hudson.
The friendly
city. And it goes from the city limits right into the city.
Yep. This particular portion, like I said, we kind of structured this so that it was multi-tiered. So the first iteration has been the walking guide, the print version, because people could take it away with them. They could stuff it in their pocket and throw it on their coffee table when they got home. And it, you know, it wasn't full of commercials or anything like that. It was just a simple little passport to Hudson. And it's been pretty successful. And as the wedding season gets in full swing, I'm at least handing out hundreds of them to wedding parties that are coming into town, which is really cool. So people from all over the place are seeing them, which is, again, part of the purpose of these things.
And we should let our listeners know that both Sheena and I sit on the executive committee for the Hudson Business Coalition. And the walking guide, it's about 2 years old now.
Yep, We've had, this will be our fourth print because we ran out one season. Oh, sorry, I'm not close enough.
And I was just reading that 85,000 guides have already been distributed.
Yep.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of guides. That's a lot of people seeing Hudson in print. So we're going to try and take it to the next level. So that's what the RFP is about.
So if people don't know about the Hudson Walking Guide, it's basically it's a passport size booklet that lists for the walking individual a guide to shopping and restaurants and places that businesses that you would approach in a walking sense.
Absolutely. It's more for it's for the tourist community, but I use it daily to sort of say, where do I want to go for lunch? Where's a quick list of things that I want to just see really quickly? So it's handy for people who live here. It's handy for people who work here. It's handy for the tourists that we want to keep coming back here.
So this RFP for wayfinding, why was it created? And we're all also you're working on a deadline where the proposals have to be in by, is it now May 9th?
It is 9th. I extended it another week because I was getting a lot of requests for an extension. So what's it to me? What's one more week at this point? I'm sorry, what was the question?
So what's the purpose of the description? What are people required to do?
Okay, so I'm doing fundraising for this project. It's always been a public-private partnership project for me. So it's been, you know, reaching out to the businesses to sort of say, we want to support you, but, you know, we need to kind of work hand-in-hand in this process. Let's reduce the amount of sort of clutter that we put out there and, you know, produce one really nice streamlined product. And so it's been super successful, and each iteration has been more and more supported by the business community. So this time we took it a step further to, you know, build on the success of this program and moved it into the second tier, which would involve the kiosks portion of it. So the reason that I kind of built the RFP was for a couple of reasons. I wanted to address, let me back up, the creative groups and the talent that we have in Hudson and Columbia County at large really fueled the beginning of this project for me, because I'm seeing like the creative solutions coming out of the business coalition, and I wanted to hook that, you know, business energy up with the creative energy that we have here. So my idea in putting this all together was to address both of those things, supporting the business community by using, you know, talent in the county and the community. So it sort of, you know, fed itself. So the solutions was coming out of the business community, fueled and created by the creative community. So that's where that workshop that you so kindly hosted to answer those questions came out. I mean, there's a lot of other purposes for this project, and obviously economic development is one of them, but I mean, I can list them off for you, but I don't know if that's necessary.
Go for it, Sheena. Yeah.
All right, let me just read from my little list. My reading aloud moment. All right, so the project goals for the Hudson Wayfinding Signage Program are to support and promote distinct identities for the Hudson downtown. It's pretty distinct, but, you know, we want to kind of be able to carry the same message across the board. Raise community and visitor awareness of downtown Hudson and what's there. Direct visitors to downtown from major transportation arteries, including the water, vehicle, and rail. We're hoping to get a spot down at Amtrak. So I'm working with the Amtrak folks to get a kiosk located down there. So that way folks hopping off the train can be like, okay.
And that happens to be one of the gateways.
It is.
And when we think, you know, a gateway is not necessarily for an automobile or a vehicle. It's also people getting off the train. And since our train station's the fourth busiest in the state, we get a lot of people coming off the train wanting to know where Hudson is, and I would think also now the riverfront is a gateway as people start taking the ferries and arriving by boat.
Exactly. So hopefully this all comes together in time for the summer, although that's pushing it, so let's not get too excited. I guess a couple of other project purposes for those still listening to my purposeful statements here. Is to increase the success and the market potential for retail, dining, and entertainment industries, enhance the user's experience, the public spaces, and economic growth and development. So I'm hopeful that the responses to the proposals are filled with really unique versions of kiosks, not something that's like a square, boring old thing, but really gets to the character and funkiness that, you know, Hudson is, and I'm excited to see what's coming out. I have proposals coming from Virginia, New York, Boston. So those, you know, just a couple of people that I've been fielding questions with. So again, I'm hopeful that there'll be a couple of local people submitting, because obviously more points will be awarded to those who are submitting from local.
And we really don't have kiosks. Well, you might say here at the 7th Street Park, there is the large map of Hudson.
Yeah.
That's kind of a kiosk. That's kind of a wayfinding. You are here.
Yeah.
But there isn't really anything else, is there?
Not really. I mean, there's the random parking signs, which also, that's the thing. Also, another thing I wanted to address by this is parking. So nobody knows where the parking is per se. And when you're just walking down the street and you see a parking left, I mean, what does that tell you? Not, yes, parking's to your left, but where? And then where are you in relationship to other things? So, you know, perhaps a consultant might say, you know, it would be ideal to put a kiosk outside of a municipal parking lot so when people do park, they know how to get to where their ultimate destination is.
And also a cohesiveness in the design of a parking sign. We have ones that have whales on them.
Mm-hmm.
We have ones that have P for parking. So it's bringing the cohesiveness of design, making it easy for, and when we were talking about when you enter any city or town, you could be in a wheelchair, walking, short, tall, in a car, in a bus.
Right.
So
on a bike, in a boat, in a car.
And it has, you know, we have, unfortunately, a lot of discussion about, for instance, when to park on what side of the street. And there really aren't those signs that aren't many of those signs, let's say, on the street. They are at the gateways of Hudson. So maybe if you're not paying attention to where you're going and you're looking at signs to figure out odd days, even days, it's a little confusing. So we want to make it easy for residents and visitors.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that our consultants will address that, because it was something that was bold in the RFP to address the parking issues and the signage associated with it. So I'm eager to see what comes out of it. And I hope it's supported by both the business community and the folks I'm requesting funding from.
How else can we be a friendly city?
How else can we be a
friendly
city?
The wayfinding, you know, the signs are certainly trying to put us on a face of a friendly city, making it easy for people to get about the city. We've talked about in group discussions about park benches, flower boxes, banners, for instance, and banners, that's also part of the wayfinding project.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is potentially another piece of it to come out of this, hopefully. It depends on how much we raise. You know, really, it's how much funding can I obtain and how much funding can I raise and what is that going to look like? So I had to ask the consultants to break it out in terms of line items. So kiosks will cost you this much, banners will cost you this much, you know, gateways will cost you this much. So I can do the Cadillac of wayfinding and I can do the Pinto of wayfinding. So in terms of making it a more friendly city, I think, you know, appearance has a lot to do with it. And, you know, I think Hudson does care about how it looks. And, you know, we're trying to dress ourselves up a little bit. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, how open we are to kind of, I'm losing my train of thought there. Let's just skip that. You're right. Benches would be helpful. And we've been talking about that at the Hudson Development Corporation Board. Actually, Cheryl Roberts came up with the idea. So I'm going to give her a shout out for that.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
And one of the things you actually started talking about was the creative community, and you're involved also in a creative economic, is it Capital Region? What's the organization?
Well, it's got a couple of names at this point. There's Upstate Creative, there's Regional Economy or Regional Alliance for the Creative Economies, Capital Region Creative Alliance. I mean, there's a couple of different things that I've seen come out of it. And, you know, really it's, you know, this group of the governor broke out the regions, and we're part of the Capital Region as Columbia County. So there's our eight counties. And in that, this Mount Auburn Associates was hired to do this sort of analysis of the creative economies. And, you know, there's definitely a difference between Albany's economy and, you know, Hudson's economy or Albany County and Columbia County, and you know, I'm sort of there to be the voice of Columbia County, to sort of be our cheerleader for the creative maker economy that we have here. And somehow by default I became Greene County too, but I have somebody working on that over there. Right now they're doing a survey, and they're surveying freelance artists to try to see how much, you know, how many people are actually involved in the creative maker economy and make their living from that. So they're actually doing a site right now and are doing a survey right now, and it's posted to the community board's Facebook page and the HDC Facebook page if people are interested in our freelance artists that want to contribute to this study.
And what's the HDC website?
It's www.hudsonfirst.com.
And what was one, I mean, I saw the survey that came out, and it showed all the eight counties from the strongest in the creative businesses and not so. Who was number one?
Columbia County.
All right.
So we're seeing, so far their preliminary data has shown that Columbia County has the highest percentage of creative economy as a sector in our total economy. I think it's hovering somewhere around 6%. So that's a huge portion of the population to be employed by, you know, the creative sector. So, yeah.
That's why, you know, I want to see artists from the Hudson area step forward and give some ideas. I think ideas are great, and we seem to have a plethora of creative people here. And to describe the creative economy, it does cover a wide range from landscape to furniture design to
architects. You name it. I mean, it almost all is creative to some extent with what they have going on here. But if you make your life's work and your money and, you know, things happen from the arts, mm-hmm. then you should be taking this survey. And I just posted it in a couple of places. So if you need more information, you can call me. That's easy too.
So what happens after the deadline of May 9th and you've got proposals in front of you? What happens after that point?
I distribute them to the committee, and then we review. And I've developed a grading sheet, which just needs to go through final review. And then we give them all a grading sheet, and we have about a week to grade the proposals. And, you know, then I imagine that there'll be pretty much a vote, and we'll select a candidate to be the person to bring their proposal to life.
Now, let's say you've picked a person or an entity that will take this project on. What's the timeline from that point, and what are they required to do?
It's pretty substantial what the consultant would be required to do. There's a serious analysis phase, and that's and a community outreach phase. So we have like we've been talking about, we have a pretty creative community here, and to tap into their, you know, sort of feelings about what Hudson has versus what it doesn't have and what would make it a more lively, interesting place, and, you know, their thoughts on, you know, how we would maybe structure an icon, or, you know, what things would look like, what colors they would be. Mm. You know, there's going to be a significant outreach portion of that, and an analysis of the existing signs, recommendations of, you know, either removing them, replacing them, alternative locations for them. And they'll be working alongside the city as well as the committee, but they'll be required to be out and about to bring this project forward.
Is there a schedule how long that process is?
It's really dependent on the consultant. You know, ideally, you know, we're going to be doing review of the proposals, and then there'll be interviews of the top three consultants, and then a selection should happen by the end of May. So that's my target date. And then once we've made the selection, we'll have to enter into contracts with them, and then we can start executing. So, and this again will be based a lot on how much fundraising I can get done, and whether or not I'd like to put in a consolidated funding application for this as well to fund the entire thing, soup to nuts, but we'll see. You never know if that'll get funded. So,
Well, at what point do you start looking for funding? During the process that the consultant is working, or after the consultant has finished their proposal for?
Oh, no. I look for funding right now.
Right now.
I'm doing fundraising, actually, currently. And am I allowed to talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in the process, and it's just me, so that's why it's been a slow process. So I started out with the little Hudson walking guides with a little sponsor me sticker, and I stuck it in the doorways of lots of businesses in town. But I had my dog with me, which was stupid because I can't bring him into every single store in town or restaurant. So I'll be back out there, and I'm actually lumping all this fundraising in together. So that's been a little bit of a confusing point for everybody, is like, well, are you doing the walking guide, and what's happening with the walking guide? And yes, I am doing the walking guide. I'm just doing the fundraising for the walking guide and the wayfinding project all at once, because I am only an army of one at Hudson Development and Hudson Community Development and Planning. So I'm doing all the fundraising at once, so when I'm knocking on your door and taking up, you know, some of your time, I won't put a time limit on it, but and asking for support, and that's what I'm doing. I'm doing it for all of it. So you can choose however you want to support the project or not. You can just, you know, bask in the wonderfulness of free advertising.
Yeah, of our friendly city.
Of our friendly city.
We talked about HDC, the Hudson Development Corporation. You're also the executive director of HCDPA. Mm-hmm. What does that stand for?
Hudson Community Development and Planning Agency.
Both of these agencies, are they city agencies?
No. This is cause for a lot of confusion as well. HDC and HCDPA are completely separate entities. HDC is set up as a nonprofit, and it's a local development corporation. And HCDPA is a leftover sort of urban renewal agency. And the funds for those agencies typically came through HUD and UDAG grants during the 70s and 80s. They used to have a ton of money, and now they don't have any money, and they're not well funded. So HCDPA does more of the administrative work with the city of Hudson grants programs and execution of those things. So that's mostly what that agency does, though it's here to address things like blighting issues and housing for low to moderate income families.
Well, we've covered quite a bit in just a few minutes. And so, Sheena, thank you very much for being on the
Art of the
Hudson Valley. And maybe we've cleared up a few things and intrigued a few more people.
Okay.
So
can I give out some community events?
We are out of time, Sheena.
All right, sorry.
But make sure those are posted on the WGXC event calendar, because that's important, anybody should do that.
Okay, will do. Thanks, Chad.
Thank you for listening to the Art of the Hudson Valley, and this is your host, Chad Weckler. I'll see and hear you hearing from me in another month. Thank you.